Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I want to give a little bit of a content warning for this show that we talk a lot about a lot of edgy things, and we've certainly talked about consensual non-consent on the show before, but we're really going to dive into it on the show. So if you need to not listen to the show for that reason, or you're not sure how it's going to make you feel, or you need to like take the space to listen to it in the way that you want, or if you that I just want to like really validate that and say that it's okay, and that if anybody wants to reach out to me because they're curious about the content of this show and understanding the topic but concerned that it is going to be triggering in a way that makes it not something that they care to listen to, reach out to me and we will try to figure out a way for you to get resources on the topic that make you feel safe. Do you have any recommendations for that while we're talking about it? If people are interested in the topic but concerned about being triggered, I mean, I guess they should go to therapy.
God, I wish that there was a resource. We're missing a lot of the intersection of trauma and kink. But I can recommend things on trauma. So if folks are interested in learning how to heal trauma through their body, which is what this is.
Yeah. And what you do.
The book Waking the Tiger is about somatic experiencing, which is the theory that we hold this kinetic energy that has, we have this inherent ability of being able to move it through our bodies to work through trauma. That book, you could definitely do a lot of reading kink into it. The book, I can't remember who wrote this, but it's called The Body Heals Itself, which is not The Body Keeps a Score. Different book. It's written by a woman, and it's about the different parts of our bodies and what emotional sort of like epicenters are there. So if you're like curious about how to work through some particular kinds of emotional pain, it can show you like where on the body to focus, which I think could be certainly read into that. And then I also love, for understanding trauma, the Complex PTSD Workbook, which is a really beautiful tool to use to understand the impact of complex trauma and trauma in general. Complex trauma is when it's more about the attachment with caregivers. And then also, if you are someone who is wanting to learn more about the impact of interpersonal violence or emotional abuse, the book The Betrayal Bond is a really important read.
Thank you for... I love... Like we were saying before, I love it when someone shows up with a syllabus in mind. So thank you for that. And and I guess the last thing that I will say, content warning wise, is that this is definitely going to be a discussion of consent that is going to be compassionate towards survivors and looking for a way for us all to heal as individuals and in our relationships and in society. So if that is comforting to know going into something that may be a minefield, that we are trying to be careful even as we are trying to be, to push the boundaries of how this topic can be covered. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Tina.
How are you?
I'm so good.
Still good?
Yes.
Still good on the mic. Fantastic. So for those who have not listened to my Interrobang episode with Andrea, I'm going to read your bio again. Andrea Glick, LMSW, which stands for Licensed Mistress of Social Work, or maestro or master, you know, whatever, depending on the day. Andrea is a psychotherapist, somatic healer, sex educator, and witch. Andrea specializes in treating trauma and PTSD for queer and trans folks using body-based and feminist therapy practices to help clients come home to themselves. Andrea practices at the Gender and Sexuality Therapy Collective in New York City. How's it going? And your lipstick is, as usual, on point.
Oh, thank you. I put it on just for you.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if that's true. I feel like probably you're always wearing lipstick for yourself or someone. I'll accept the compliment.
Yeah, please do.
So we talked a lot on your interrobing episode about your therapy practice. Mm-hmm. And for your Why Are People Into That episode, when we were talking about the topic that we wanted to cover, I was thinking about how amazing it is that your therapy practice is focused on healing trauma through BDSM. And we started up for obvious reasons. That got us started talking about consent. Mm-hmm. And I have not yet done an episode that is specifically about what is known in the kink world as consensual non-consent. Some people might refer to it as rape fantasy or ravishment fantasy. Mm-hmm. That can look a lot of different ways. But one place that I would really love to start mm-hmm. is unpacking what we mean by consensual non-consent, but also yes. in what ways something that seems so dark could have mm-hmm. the potential to be not only arousing but healing yes. for so many people. So let's start with, what is your definition of consensual non-consent?
I would say that consensual non-consent is a scene or a dynamic that has been pre-negotiated.
Very crucial.
At length.
Yes.
That has room for consent to be played around with. And mm-hmm. that can look like a lot of different things. It can look like saying no.
And meaning yes. Mm-hmm.
It can look like age play. It yeah. can look like having a very strong narrative arc about the scene. This is going to recreate this, or this is going to follow this story that we have.
Which might be something that has happened to the players, or mm-hmm. it might be an invocation of right. a story or a dynamic or a character mm-hmm. or an archetype from pop culture or literature, or something a little bit more of an archetype, like the archetype between like the like principal of an mm-hmm. All boys English school and the like boys that got caught smoking in the
totally.
Bathroom.
Yeah, and it can be as surface or as deep as people would like it to be, too, totally. Which I think is really important. We think about like resisting and then giving in, mm-hmm. right? Very hot. That's consensual non-consent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's not always this really particular narrative.
It's not always about playing with, I don't even want to use violence because to me, and this is semantics, but for me, violence is a word that has non-consent woven into it, right?
Yeah.
So when talking about BDSM, talking about things that unconsensually might be seen as violence, I prefer to use words like force or power or even you in our other interview, you use the term kinetic energy, you know, or a fantasy of coercion or mm-hmm. a fantasy of manipulation or a right. fantasy of control.
Mm-hmm.
So those things can be super intense and mm-hmm. playing with non-consent, power play, power dynamics, and playing with control mm-hmm. can be about a sort of like push and pull in the way that like that partner dancing has pushing and pulling and resisting and, you know, pressing on yeah. someone and pressing back.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very physical experience. And we were talking right about the body, being in touch with your body. And sex and kink can feel more intensified by more physical resistance, right?
Yeah, but it can also be psychological resistance.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Or it can all be, you could be playing in the same way that you would otherwise play, but bring in an element of like a fantasy of non-consent, which then transforms the activities that you were playing with or the sex that you were having into something that might be super charged with that fantasy of non-consent.
Right. And I think most people have fantasies around feeling in control or feeling out of control.
Totally.
And consensual non-consent is very much a part of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that off mic we were talking about being extremely important to any discourse about consensual non-consent is really being explicit and breaking down this thing that this dynamic that may feel more intuitive for some folks than others, or may feel intuitive when you have more experience with BDSM, or if you are naturally inclined towards it or oriented towards it. This idea of negotiating a scene or a scenario or a container of some kind in which, put in the simplest terms possible, you say no and you mean yes.
Right.
It's about consciously, enthusiastically, consenting to acknowledging how charged that thing is, right?
Yeah.
What it's not is being manipulative, playing hard to get, playing mind games, trying to elicit a certain kind of response so that you feel desired. Lying, not like not taking no for an answer and continuing to push and like enjoying that push and pull and that give and thinking that that's what seduction is and that's what flirtation is and that sex is all about like pushing and pushing and pushing until someone surrenders or like acquiesces. I think that we see those scenarios romanticized in movies a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that hardcore porn that depicts some element of force or resistance takes a lot of flack and is an overdetermined scapegoat for the perpetuation of rape culture, when in many ways, movies like The Notebook, where the entire dynamic of the romance is Ryan Gosling won't take no for an answer. And that, like, really works Rachel McAdams up for, like, a really long time. And then they, like, have this, like, epic love story where they, like, can't get enough of each other. To me, the role that consent has to transform something from manipulative abuse into fun and pleasure and healing and just like all the good stuff is conceptually like easy for me to understand, but it clearly is not easy for us to understand as a society. And I also don't want to underestimate the fact that even somebody who plays with this stuff a lot and works with this stuff a lot and thinks about this stuff a lot, like, doesn't mean that I always know the difference in a meaningful way. So I guess one question is, how can we tell the difference between consensual, kinky, non-consent play and true literal manipulation and abuse and coercion and rape?
Yeah.
How do we know the difference?
Right. Like, it's called consensual non-consent for a really specific reason.
Right.
It is perhaps the most necessary to, I won't say the most, it's up there for the most amount of discussion and check-ins and planning out of all fantasies. So the difference is that it is deeply pre-negotiated.
Yes.
And there are so many things in place to help the person feel safe, both people, all the peoples.
Yeah, all the people,
there, right?
Yeah.
Feel safe, feel secure, safe words, aftercare.
Yeah.
We were talking about this earlier, but discussing with your partner why it's a fantasy of yours, whether you're the top or the bottom, really getting to interrogate that together about like, yeah, why does this turn me on? For example, like if you are a white cis man who is really interested in being the top in a consensual non-consent rape fantasy, you have a lot of thinking to do about why.
Yeah.
And I suggest doing a lot of that before acting on it. You know, very similar for people who are survivors, right?
Yeah.
Like have a conversation with your partner or with yourself or with your therapist or with all of them about what is this going to be like? Why do you want this? How can you be reminded that this is safe and this is not going to be similar to what happened in the past?
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I think a lot of the healing can come in too, is when you rewrite your narrative. There is an idea in therapy of a corrective emotional experience or physical experience where the same thing happens again, but there's a different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
It's also called a mismatch. Again, not all consensual non-consent fantasies mirror someone's rape or mirror someone's trauma. But even if it's like similar themes that are there, this time you are choosing it, this time you are cared for, this time you are getting pleasure, right? So that is a very corrective experience. And so framing it that way and also working through, like we talked about with shame, that is an important thing to work through, is having shame about having this fantasy, about wanting this, being able to work through that. So it's so different because there's a lot of self-exploration that goes into this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of negotiation. There are a lot of boundaries that are in place. And everybody's consenting. That is the biggest difference, is that everybody's on board. Everybody has signed up for this.
So consensual non-consent, a little wordy, a little seemingly, it is, in the true sense of the word, a paradox, and yet so much of desire is a paradox, and playing with the yeses that mean noes and the noes that mean yeses, and the feeling good when someone calls you bad, and
totally
is both the topic of this show and the sort of object of the why and the name of the show, and also something that we ultimately, I don't know, that is ultimately an elusive mystery. And in any case, the more that we study it in culture and in science and in the kinds of conversations that we're having right now, we may feel that we understand it, but we have to accept that there's never going to be a formula that works for everyone.
Totally.
But why? I mean, why are people into consensual non-consent? Or like, why do we even call it that? Why does that exist? Like, why are we? That's it. That's my question.
I wish I remember where I read this. So this is like very not academic of me. I believe this is the most common fantasy amongst.
When I had Dr. Justin Leigh Miller on the show, and he is a social psychologist and recently wrote a book called Tell Me What You Want, and he's a fellow at the Kinsey Institute. He did a very recent study of sexual fantasies. That's what Tell Me What You Want is about. And I can't remember off the top of my head what the exact stat was, but something that he talks about at length is how incredibly common that is a fantasy. Now, there's a difference between a fantasy and something that you actually want to play with.
True. Right. So this is, first off, I think that's a huge thing, is normalizing this. This is, if not the most common fantasies, one of the most common fantasies. I think that's something that a lot of people, women in particular, have this burden of thinking they're the only ones that want this. Something is seriously wrong with me. I must be bad if I want this. It's very common. It's very quote normal, whatever the fuck that means.
Normal in the sense that it's that many, It's common.
It's
like,
common.
Like, not like a, like common people, like a commoner, but like it's common. Like many people have this fantasy.
Yeah.
And also like having the fantasy, like having that, the desire, like wanting to think about non-consensual situations or uses of force or rape and however it manifests while you masturbate, while you get aroused, while you get off, or thinking about it or acting it out during sex in a scene doesn't mean that you want it to literally happen to you.
Yes.
You know, whether it's happened before and you are thinking about it in an arousal context, it doesn't mean that you are broken forever because you want it to happen again. Like, just because it's coming up and bringing up a lot of strong emotions, including maybe becoming associated with good feelings, like like that, it doesn't mean that you want to do it or that you want it to happen to you.
Yes. Yep. That's a really,
because that counts for people who have fantasies of being the top or the person using the force. That doesn't using the force, using force in a scene. Now I'm definitely imagining a Jedi non-consent scene of someone using the force. But anyway,
Oh, that's hot. I like that.
Some I'm thinking about Adam Driver now. But anyway.
So, yes, just because it's a fantasy doesn't mean that it's something you want to actually happen to you, just like all fantasies.
True.
Right. And just because you want to be the top in that scenario doesn't make you a bad person.
Totally.
Or you may not have to be worried that this will happen on accident. Obviously, again, like, especially I think for tops to be really not self-critical, like criticizing, but just really like being really interested in where this desire is coming from and what the purpose serves for you, I think is a way to really unpack that and will kind of lessen the shame and the questions of what it means to want this. And also that, just like with all fantasies, we're just talking about power and who has the power or who has the control. And that's a very common thread in a lot of different kink and sex dynamics. And this is just another way of going about redistributing control.
I'm thinking about also consent with regards to fantasies and the life of the mind and solo play and masturbation. It, like, if you have a fantasy of non-consent and you're thinking about it when you're masturbating and you're getting aroused, you're getting off on the idea of raping, being raped, it's interesting to think about where the consent comes into that. I almost want to use the word permission instead of consent, like with yourself.
Yeah.
Like giving yourself permission to indulge in that fantasy, enjoy that fantasy, get off in that fantasy. I mean, maybe that leads me to my next question, which is, if you're having those fantasies and you want to give yourself permission to have them and enjoy them, what are some good questions to be asking yourself to understand the difference between, like, you may feel disturbed by your own mind and your own desire. But so what are some questions that you can start to explore in order to give yourself permission to enjoy those fantasies if you want, or act out those fantasies with a partner, which, again, there's a difference between wanting to play with something consensually versus actually wanting that to literally happen, like there to be like only non-consent, not consensual non-consent. Anyway.
Right. So understanding what is hot about it. Right?
Yeah, what's hot about it?
So like, I think we're focusing on, I think a lot, the bottom in this scene, but just
sure.
What is hot about not being in control? What is hot about someone taking it?
Mm-hmm.
What is hot about feeling used? What is hot about not having a say, right? Like, there are a lot of things about that that are really sexy and that you can find in The Notebook, right? Like,
sure.
You know, like, that those things are, I mean, God, I can't believe I'm talking about this, but like, right, 50 Shades of Grey started for, you know, like, better or for worse in a lot of ways, this, like, sexual revolution amongst 40 to, I don't know, something women in the suburbs, right? Like, people want this. People want to feel owned. People want to feel like someone is going to like take what they need. Like that mm. those things are sexy. So like, what is hot about it? Instead of like what's fucked up about it?
Yeah.
Right? To focus a little more on like what is sexy.
Yeah, you're already there with the fucked upness if you're fantasizing about it, right? Like, no need to like...
Yeah, we don't need to focus on that.
Yeah,
right?
We don't need to dwell on that. It's like you're already... You somatically understand the charge of what is fucked up about it. So maybe the thing to explore is...
What's hot about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I think also to examine where it comes from in The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson. Oh. She writes a lot. Great book. She writes a lot about this, about how the first sex scenes she was exposed to as a little girl were all rape scenes in mm-hmm. movies, which mm-hmm. I can certainly relate to.
Sure.
And sexuality, as we all know, does not develop in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And so, right, these seeds were planted when we were really, really little. And for better or for worse, here they are.
Yeah.
Right? And so, of course, you're going to be interested in this with what you have been exposed to. The, like, first movies or the first things that got you excited mm-hmm. Were probably not sex scenes. Like, maybe you weren't allowed to watch them when you were little, but you were allowed to watch, like, I always think about this. I remember watching Chitty Chitty Bang Bang when I was a little girl. And I think the kids get kidnapped and locked in a cage.
Oh,
and I remember being like, well, something's happening, right? But like, you know, but like I wasn't watching like sex scenes as a little girl, but like that's what I had to work with, right? And it was like power and control. Mm. Like these are the themes, right? And so you can find them in like most like Disney movies. Like they're there, right? Like so this is what we have to work with. And also how resilient we are as queer people, as women, to take this thing that's been like either happened to us or we were the first thing that we heard about sex was as little kids is don't get raped, right? Like, and then
it's on you,
right? Totally. And to live in the world that we live in where it is a very real situation that could happen to you at any moment, and to fetishize it and make it our own,
yes,
and create our own narratives around it and process the honestly trauma of living in rape culture through fantasizing and like it's fucking with it.
Yeah mm-hmm. Let's fuck with it right back.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, when I started to really notice that I was having a lot of rape fantasies in my mid-20s, something that I was able to, and because I'm me, I like went straight to the like, What's going on here? Because that's like fun to think about for me. A conclusion that I was able to come to pretty quickly was that there was something in that fantasy that had to do with someone being so desirous of me and my body that they don't care. Mm-hmm. About the things that you're supposed to care about as a civilized human being. They don't care if I want it. They don't care if they're being moral or ethical or legal or doing the right thing. They just want me so bad that they will stop at nothing to fuck me.
Yeah. It's like the ultimate feeling desired.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's really complicated because wouldn't it be nice? And this is a real question, not a rhetorical question. Like, maybe I'll say it like this. Would it be nice for me to be able to access that feeling of being utterly desired without the fantasy that that person is violating me?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it's like you were saying earlier, like, I don't know what it is like to have not grown up in a patriarchal society, right? So, and even, you know, even if we see the revolution in our lifetimes, like, you know, I will never know.
Yeah.
I will never know what it's like to have, not to double negative, but I will never know what it's like to have not grown up with that.
Yes. Yeah. That's another part of the Argonauts that I think a lot about and that I talk about with clients is something about how we will never be able to talk about like inherent or natural female sexuality or because there, right, there is no way of doing that. Like, we just don't know. We will never know what that looks like.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and isn't that kind of, like, beside the point?
Totally, yeah.
Like, we're all, like, dealing with different nature, nurture influences, and that is, like, part of what makes...
Totally.
That's, like, why, you know, you have a crush on someone because they are the result of a million tiny little influences mm-hmm. that has made them who they are. That's, like, what makes us desirous, and that's what makes, like, chemistry between people. That's, like, part of the human condition. So trying to, like, I don't know, trying to separate it just sort of seems like, you know, maybe one day when we have sex robots, we'll understand.
Yeah.
Artificial human consciousness separate from social influence. But anyway, but they still will have been programmed by people who grew up in society. So anyway.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
So your therapy practice focuses in part on helping people to heal from trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And you specialize in using BDSM as a tool or a practice in one's personal life to heal from trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, power play and control play and the sort of mind fuck of consensual non-consent is often a part of BDSM and manifests in lots of different activities and lots of different dynamics. So with regards to your practice, let's take a step back and say, like, BDSM power play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can BDSM power play be healing for trauma?
Yeah. It has a lot to do with that idea of the corrective emotional experience in the sense that you are choosing what happens to you. You are being cared for because hopefully with kink comes a lot of pre and post care for both the top and bottom.
Yeah.
You are getting to experience being in your body and feeling safe there, feeling not shamed for your desires, feeling like you can trust somebody with your body, especially if there's any kind of restraint, emotional or physical, happening. You are, like, really trusting someone.
Yeah.
And you are getting to reenact maybe things that have happened to you and that have different endings, that has pleasure involved instead of pain, and just, God, like, just being connected to your physical existence, right? Like, we are perhaps the most connected to ourselves in these moments and in these scenes, when a lot of people, trauma survivors and not, live in day-to-day dissociation.
Yeah. Well, that actually reminds me of another reason that consensual non-consent is hot to me, to a lot of people, I think, is that you don't have to, when you're the bottom in that scenario, you don't have to make any choices.
Yeah, what a relief.
Yeah, you're not responsible for anything.
Mm-hmm.
You are only reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to what I was saying before, that you're reacting in a state of this, like, implicit trust, not only of the person that they are going to, that they are ultimately not trying to harm you, and they ultimately do want to take care of you, but you're also trusting that the thing that they're doing is definitely the thing that they want. I'll say that for me, like, bottoming in a consensual non-consent scene is healing for me because it it helps me to get out of the sexual headspace of thinking that I have to be in control,
yeah,
or thinking that I have to make the decisions, or thinking that in order for it to be good sex, that I have to be the one that's good at sex,
mm-hmm,
you know, or like also worrying or wondering, like, does this person really want this? Does this person really, mm-hmm, want me? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, really give in. You're really just giving in. And yeah, for the top in the scenario too,
mm,
especially if that person has experienced powerlessness, which, mm, for many of us, that is the case, right?
Yeah.
You get to feel powerful over, yeah, someone who has given you that, right?
Yes.
It's not like a gross power play at work or some shit like that, right?
No.
It is like you getting to feel powerful, you getting to feel like something is yours, getting to experience, yeah, like a true physical sensation of power.
Yeah.
That's so healing if that has been something that you've literally never experienced before.
Yeah, and I guess the inverse of being the bottom and feeling an assurance that the top is doing exactly what they want to you, the appeal for the top in this scenario is I get to do exactly the thing that I want and have, mm-hmm, the thing exactly the way that I want it.
Mm-hmm.
And this person is experiencing my pure,
yeah,
desire, mm-hmm, for them, which is hot.
Yeah.
So what advice do you have for someone who has a consensual non-consent fantasy,
mm-hmm,
and or desire to play it out in a scene with a partner? What advice do you have for them about how to approach it?
Mm-hmm. I think that understanding where it comes from and where the desire is a really good place to start.
Yeah.
And also with yourself, I think like many things, the best way to figure that out is to get some practice on your own,
mm-hmm,
fantasizing on your own, masturbating,
mm-hmm,
seeing what that, where it goes in your head. And if you have a partner who you feel like you can talk about this with, having very long conversations in a non-sexual space about,
yeah,
this,
yeah,
I think would be great. If you're dating someone or you're sleeping with someone who you're feeling a little nervous about how to bring this up, which, mm, I think is probably more common than, mm, the other, is to find a way of discussing it that isn't going to bring up a lot of shame for either of you about wanting it, right? So like,
mm,
normalizing it for the other person, explaining where it comes from for you, what you think would be really hot about it, where, yeah, just like where the desire comes from, and being really prepared that a lot of people are not going to be interested, which is totally fine.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will be.
Yeah.
And I think that if it's bumping up against your trauma or you're concerned, it's going to bump up against your trauma to definitely see a therapist about that,
mm-hmm,
someone who's educated, obviously, like we've talked about, because your partner can't be the only person to hold that,
yeah,
for you. Yeah, so a lot of, like, self-exploration.
Yeah, and something you alluded to earlier about how there's more of an onus on a cis straight man who,
mm-hmm,
wants to be the top in a consensual non-consent scene with a woman, that just like extra
mm-hmm,
thinking and concern,
mm-hmm,
and care that they have to take with that fantasy makes me think a little bit about how sometimes there is a literal correspondence and sometimes there's an inverse correspondence between the power that you have in your larger public social life versus the power that you eroticize in your private sexual life. I guess my question for you might be, like, how do you think that these fantasies are different for people who have relative power in,
yeah,
our society and people who don't?
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, like, if in the fantasy they want to have power over,
mm-hmm,
someone who actually has less literal power than they do in society. Like, for example, a cis man wanting to overpower a woman of any kind sexually.
Yes.
Like, how is that different from women wanting to overpower one another, or men wanting to overpower one another, or, you know, also with other intersectional manifestations of power, like with regards to race and with regards to class and, you know, cis people and trans people and straight people and queer people. And
Yeah. I think something that's very important for that particular dynamic is that if you are a cis man and this is something that you're interested in, to understand the psychic impacts on your partner of patriarchy and that you may bring it up and they may be like, yeah, let's do it. But that may be informed by them sort of being conditioned to always being wanting to like please their partner or be a good woman, right? Yeah. So like holding space for all of that and knowing your partner well enough to know if they want it or if they're like just trying to do something to be good to you. So like that is – that's more about like really exploring a relationship and understanding where the desire may come from for your partner too. Mm-hmm. And then also if you're a cis man and your cis woman partner brings this to you, to respect that as her fantasy.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really important. And kind of just like, how can you be the best top for this for her?
Yeah.
And I think in that particular power dynamic, to help her feel like she has the most agency and control possible within it.
Yeah.
And having it be largely for her, right?
Yeah. Something that I've been thinking about now that you've got me, like, reconditioned to, like, think about how things are embodied. Good job. It took you approximately 45 minutes. It also, maybe, like, one good technique for this is to practice empathy in the truest sense of the word, of, like, really thinking about, like, how do you fantasize or imagine that this is going to feel for your partner? Mm-hmm. And having that conversation with your partner, like if you have a fantasy of ravishing someone and your fantasy is all about like how you're going to feel powerful and how it's going to feel for you to like stick your dick in that person and like have your way with them or kidnap them and lock them in a cage. It, like imagining like what could they possibly get out of it?
Yes.
And thinking to, you know, and using that as like as a guide, because if you're thinking like.
Right. You're in this particular scenario of a like seemingly straight cis couple.
Yeah.
Your lady partner already feels this way every single fucking day.
Right.
How is this going to be different?
Right.
Right? And what is – how can this feel good for her versus repetitive or re-traumatizing or triggering? I think that's important. And then also in talking about different – how this can play out differently, if this is between two dykes, for example, like for the bottom, like if your partner is a survivor, like what is it going to – or just like – she's a woman in the world, right?
Sure.
What's it going to feel like for her to be doing this to you? And how can you – tops need aftercare too.
True.
Right? So like how can you take care of her afterwards? And same can be said about any other top, right? But like in particular with this, it's really heavy stuff. And like both people are going to need a lot of care, not just the bottom.
Well, that is extremely good advice. And going back to what you were saying about – cis men who might have fantasies of being dominant in this scenario. I mean, it's also I've had frustrating experiences of asking for of like having the fantasy of like being ravished and asking for that from a man and having the man be like, I can't go there. I can't give that to you because I don't want to disrespect you. And, you know, if somebody you know, tops need aftercare, and also tops are allowed to have boundaries. So, like, obviously, I respect anybody that like doesn't want to do those things with me.
Right.
But if their hesitance comes from a place of not being willing to engage with me, then like
No, I understand. It's like they're allowed to have their boundaries and also like don't assume that like you don't need to protect me.
Exactly.
Right? Like if I'm asking for this, I've probably fucking thought a lot about it.
It's a really, really good way of putting it.
Yeah. And actually, and again, to be like, right. So saying like, I'm not comfortable with this because of these reasons that I've done lots of thinking about is one thing, or to another different thing is to be like, oh, I don't know, like, are you sure? Or like, yeah, I don't want to hurt you in this way. Like, I, you know, to trust your bottom.
Yeah.
Trust that your bottom's thought a lot about this.
Yeah, yeah. And like, if somebody says, I don't want to hurt you to someone who's saying, hurt me. Well, that just, this is why I think conversations like this are so important, and sort of unpacking these paradoxes are so important, because I want in my partners people who understand the difference between consent and consensual non-consent.
Yeah.
And non-consent and consensual non-consent. I want people who understand the difference between me saying like hurt me in a figurative way, like mm-hmm. you know, like spank me or tie me up or call me a slut, like mm-hmm. any of these things versus like actually like harming me.
Yes.
And
yes.
Understanding the difference, and like consent is the element that creates the difference. But that's also not black and white, because
no, this is this is a really important segue into the difference between emotional and physical and sexual abuse and consensual non-consent or a DS dynamic, right?
So let's go there. What is the difference between BDSM and abuse?
Right, so it's very similar to setting the scene. What is the difference between rape and consensual non-consent is consent and negotiation. And both people have discussed this, or peoples have discussed this at length. They understand the desire around it, the boundaries of it.
Yeah.
If your kink is to be humiliated and your partner is out at a bar making fun of you in a way that doesn't feel hot, that's abuse, right?
Totally.
That's outside of the – and even if you're in a 24/7 DS relationship, that's different, right?
Totally.
So, like, being called, like, stupid or, like, a dumb little girl or a slut within the dynamic when it is appropriate is one thing. And that person making you feel that way all the time in a way that isn't consensual is not okay.
Totally.
If your partner doesn't respect when you need to get out of that dynamic, right? Like if you need a break, if the context has shifted, if you get triggered and you need them to come out of it with you and they can't, like that's not okay too.
Yeah.
And I think another thing with consensual non-consent is this isn't to look back on sexual assault or on sexual trauma and be like, oh, wow, like, well, I'm into this, so maybe that person picked up on that, and that's what that was.
Oof,
yeah,
no.
That's not what we're talking. So that doesn't include consent. And if that scenario didn't, again, being very attuned to your body, if that didn't sit well with you, then it wasn't okay.
I think the thing that we also have to talk about when we talk about all of this is that when you make the decision to play out a consensual non-consent scene, you're taking a risk.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, the fundamentals of BDSM are consent and negotiation
mm-hmm.
and creating a structure
mm-hmm.
and creating a mutual understanding and creating a code, right? Like saying, okay, for this period of time,
mm-hmm.
no is going to mean yes, but I have a safe word, and that safe word is hippopotamus, and hippopotamus
right.
is the word that actually means no.
Mm-hmm.
That is the fundamentals of BDSM, and
mm-hmm.
the reasons that we do it are for pleasure, for healing, for whatever ways we want, as long as everybody involved is a consenting adult. And the idea behind that is to let loose and to lose ourselves
mm-hmm.
in those scenes, because we've negotiated them beforehand. But there's always the possibility that we are going to make mistakes, and that we are going to, while we're playing with fire, that we're going to get burned or burn each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important for people you know, this is why in harm reduction we talk about making risk-aware assessments. And when we talk about safer sex, we're not saying, like, well, we've created a safe space, and if you are offended within this safe space, like, that's your problem. That's why we say safer, and that's why we say risk-aware assessment, and why we say harm reduction, not harm getting rid of all harm.
Right. What is it going to look like if your partner's triggered?
Yeah.
So, like, no, you have to know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what is it? And what is it going to look like if what does it look like to retract consent? Because it's a very important thing that we're trying to talk about in the world right now. Like, what does it like the fact that you are entitled to change your relationship to the consent in a scene at any point? At any point.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
So, and what does it mean if you are the top in that scenario and the bottom says, I don't consent to this anymore? Like, how do you react? I mean, that's a rhetorical question, but, like, I think it's important for this, for us to talk about this, because sometimes I feel like people say, well, BDSM is so great because you talk about everything extensively ahead of time, and then you, like, you negotiate and you have a safe word. Then once you go into that, like, abuse isn't possible because you've negotiated. And that's just false. That's just not correct.
Yeah.
Abuse is possible within BDSM. And sometimes it's harder for people to to know the difference and to speak up, because, again, they may feel shame that they created this scenario or asked for it. And that's why I just, I want us to continue to have conversations about being able to, like, to understand the difference, because I don't want us all to, like, walk around on eggshells and, like, not, like, let go and not do things that are dark and not do things that are edgy and dangerous and scary. Like, I want to be scared by sex.
Right, like, right. Yes. And actually, if you are dating a survivor, this is and you are interested in this, wow, what an amazing way to get to understand your partner's triggers and how you can take care of your partner as a supportive partner of a survivor. It's not to say this is, like, the way to do it, but, like, if you're going to play with fire, you do have to be very prepared to know how to care for the person or yourself, and what that's going to look like if things go too far. And so it's kind of an invitation to become even more attuned to your partner's experience.
Also, like, understand how fire works. Like, understand, like, what's flammable. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. Right. And so that's another thing is, like, this is a trigger that is off limits. This is a trigger that I want to play with. And, like, let's be prepared for how you can, how we can take care of each other, or what I may need if, like, that doesn't actually feel good.
Yeah.
If you're ever dating a survivor, knowing what their triggers are and how you can support them if they get triggered and what coping works for them is incredibly important.
Totally. Why go through, why go to the trouble of all of this negotiation? Like, what are, what are we trying to, what are we trying to get at? Why is it worth it?
Yeah.
And how can, you know, maybe people think rape fantasies and they think of, I don't know, fucking Bob from Twin Peaks, right? Like the scary, the scary villainous stranger that, like, crawls up into your window or, like, pops out of the bushes, dehumanizes you, does violent things to you. First of all, that's not where most consent violations actually happen. Most of it is intimate partner violence, right?
Yes.
And maybe your fantasies are more like Bob from Twin Peaks, because that is, in a lot of cases, like, more of a fiction than the dark reality of what consent violations that are actually traumatizing to us are like. But maybe you are eroticizing intimate partner violence. Maybe you are eroticizing frat parties. Maybe you are eroticizing serial killers or monsters or beasts, like creatures, you know, like, just for example. You mentioned being kidnapped and locked in a cage, right? That obviously is as much of a consent violation as, like, rape in maybe the strictest sense of the word. What are some other scenarios that are playing with consent? And I guess, like, the reason that I ask this is to say that there are lots of gradients of intensity that you can play with if you're interested in this. Like, if you're interested in it, you don't have to go directly to
You don't have to go to 10, right?
You don't have to go to 10.
Like, level one is, like, your partner holding you down a little bit, right?
Totally.
Like resisting a little bit.
Right. I mean, any bondage ultimately is a non-consent fantasy.
Absolutely. Right. Or,
I mean, not necessarily. I guess sometimes it's a lot of bondage dynamics.
It's about not being in control. That's
right.
And that is consensual non-consent, is you are giving someone else the control.
Right. And same with sadomasochism, any manifestation of sadomasochism, you know, he hit me and it felt like a kiss, right? But not in that fucked up way of that song, but in the sense of like, and this is why I always put it like, I asked him to hit me, so it felt like a kiss.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yes, I think that it is a spectrum, and that a lot of times when people think about consensual non-consent, they think of like the worst possible thing they can think of. And that's always what it is. And that's absolutely not true.
Yeah.
I think it is so understandable that we would try and make sense of this phenomena through sex. That's a lot of what sex is about, is understanding things, ourselves, and is similar to reclaiming the word dyke or queer. It is reclaiming this experience that is a very universal experience for a lot of people.
Yeah, and either then, that like actually experiencing it or the fear of the experience.
Yes, or the first time, right, hearing about sex for the first time through rape, which is really common.
Yeah, I mean, in middle school, all of the girls had to take a how not to get raped class, while all the boys took a survival skills class.
Oh. Exactly. Yeah. Of course, when you're a hormonal 13-year-old, you're going to develop some fantasies about that. That makes sense, right?
Totally.
We are made to feel powerless non-consensually all the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is an opportunity to...
Take the power back.
Yeah. We will do a lot of different creative things to feel in control.
Yeah.
A lot of... This is really different, and now we're talking about abuse, but in... abusive relationships, people, right, like, oh, I started that fight, right? Like and it's like, it's my fault. Well, actually, like, it's in the survivor's best interest to, you know, be the one that chooses when the violence happens. Mm. And so if people are like, well, takes two to tango, I started that fight, or like, I instigated that. Like, that's a very common thing to happen within abusive relationships, because then it's on your terms. It's a way for the survivor to get some power back.
Yeah.
Which the same could be said in a consensual situation, right? Like, I'm now choosing when this happens to me. This has happened to me. This could happen to me.
Yeah.
Now it's going to happen to me when I want it to.
So going back to this topic, if you are a kinky person and you are playing with any power dynamic in your relationship, what are some signs that... that things are veering from healthy BDSM into unhealthy abusive dynamics?
Yeah. It has a lot to do with boundaries. Mm-hmm. If your partner doesn't respect them, crosses them, makes you feel crazy for asking for things, blames you, makes you feel responsible for their entire emotional experience, takes things farther than you want them to go, is coercive, plays out the dynamic in ways or around people that it's not appropriate. For example, with money or with domestic labor or in front of family members, in front of friends, in a way that's not negotiated or consensual.
Mm-hmm.
If your partner doesn't know the boundaries of the dynamic and isn't able to get out of it to work through some maybe more difficult things, and like, for example, like, you can't always bring that persona into a fight or into a conversation to renegotiate boundaries. If you're renegotiating boundaries with, like, a dominant partner, they should not be dominating you in that conversation.
So this is a loaded question.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about the possibility of meaningful consent within a 24/7 dynamic? By which I mean the idea behind... a 24/7 dominant and submissive dynamic is that it's 24/7. There is no time of the day or week in which you are not playing, or that you are not within that dynamic. Like and a lot of people really crave this. A lot of people crave complete control,
yeah.
to quote The Clash. And I'm not sure if that's what they were talking about, but or even people who like say they want to play without safe words or
yeah, blanket consent,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or what do you think about playing mm-hmm. with that sort of absolutism?
Well, yeah, it is really complicated, but I think you negotiate the boundaries, hopefully, of that relationship, right?
Right.
There is an initial conversation in which you give up that power,
right.
and you give it to someone. And boundaries shift and change and people grow. We are not the same people we were at the start of that relationship.
Totally.
And so I think saying like, and there's a way to make it hot even. Like,
totally.
You know, it doesn't have to be a serious conversation where like, okay, we're jumping out of these roles, right? It can be very, be a part of it, right? Like, you make me feel so owned and I fucking love that. And what would make me feel even more owned is blank. Or like, you know, I've changed my mind about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really healthy to renegotiate boundaries, even in a 24/7 dynamic. And if you give blanket consent, like, and nothing comes up for you, like, great. I doubt that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that can still be, like, blanket consent with a couple of, like, footnotes on it, right? Like, you can make it whatever you need it to be. And I think that it is absolutely the top's responsibility to be checking in about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if part of what you're trying to create is that dynamic of totally letting go, then that means that somebody is, to a certain degree, always in that subspace dynamic of like mm-hmm. wanting to please. And so
yeah.
this is mm-hmm. a case in which, like, if you're going to be a dominant in a 24/7 relationship, like, there might be, like, more pressure on you to, like, recognize, like, when you need aftercare. Like, you might have mm-hmm. to advocate for your own
yes.
aftercare. I don't know. I feel like I could see a top being like, oh, no, I've changed my mind about this, or I want to renegotiate, mm-hmm. but I don't want to, like, disappoint my
yeah.
bottom, who
oh,
is, like, looking
totally.
Up to me as, like, a goddess who
mm-hmm.
always has all the answers, for example.
Right. Yeah. It's about being attuned to your partner, right? Like, sensing and knowing what it looks like when things are not okay or things need to shift. And that's for both the top and the bottom.
What are some other hot consensual non-consent scenes that you can think of?
Oh, my gosh. I think a very popular one is, like, a mommy daughter or, like, daddy girl.
Mm.
That's very common. Babysitter.
Oh, I love a babysitter.
Uh-huh.
Teacher.
A lot of, like, authority
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
roles. Yeah, those are really common and are oftentimes not even necessarily, right, the person's experience. And it's just, like, these archetypes, like, playing into an archetype.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. There's definitely some, like, really juicy, nerdy ones, right, in, like, fan fiction.
Sure.
Because you mentioned Star Wars earlier, so I'm thinking about, right, like,
yeah.
some, like, getting to be a character. That's such a, I think, a really safe way to come into this is, like, not being yourself, right?
Right, right,
so, like,
right.
You are, for example, like Hermione Granger.
Sure.
And, like, your top is, for example, Professor Snape, right? It's like, that's such a safe way to come into this. Like, you know, it's these, like, these roles that we know really well and that we love and that aren't us. And there's, like, fun ins there. What are some hot ones that you can think of or interesting?
I mean, I think I mentioned parties. It's interesting that a lot of the time when one says gangbang, that is very evocative of non-consent to people, even
yeah.
though
mm-hmm.
five people topping, like, sexually topping someone doesn't necessarily have mm-hmm. to have a fantasy of violation
mm-hmm.
or a fantasy of coercion. It can just be about that physical
yeah.
power and, like, all of that, like, attention
mm-hmm.
and desire on the bottom, like, coming from so many different people, and also just, like, physically what, like, let's say five people can do
mm-hmm.
like with your body that one person is, you know, the strongest, like, single person is, like, not capable of, like, manipulating or, like,
mm-hmm.
moving your body around in certain ways.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, the, like, consensual non-consent gangbangs, right? The, like, sports team is, like, a very fun one. Or, like, oh, my God, like, pack of older girls at a sleepover.
I mean, come on. 100%. Or your babysitter and all of her friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, surprising no one. I have like an almost famous style groupie fantasy about, you know, sometimes it's more about overpowering, but also sometimes it's, I like don't even know if you would call this consensual non-consent, the idea of just being like passed around or like shown off in a way, and where you're like, oh, I like don't know if I'm comfortable with this, but I like really want to impress all of these like cool rock stars. So I'm just going to like go along with it. And like all of my sexual experiences are just going to be about being useful to them.
Yeah.
And then feeling special. Like sometimes I specifically eroticize the things that are fucked up about the experience, you know? It's like I just like want to give permission to people like that it doesn't have to be like take all of the things that are gross or uncomfortable out of it and then enjoy it. Anecdotally, in my experience, eroticizing that has helped me to understand it and been healing and helps me to recognize when people are when people are doing that to me, it like it has like sort of broken the like patriarchal spell over me,
right?
And I like don't put up with that from people the way that I used to before I started to turn it into a sex game.
Absolutely. Yes, being like I want to feel owned and used and worthless and humiliated and like all of these things. You will know when that feels good and when that is not fucking okay.
Yeah.
And that is your like protection spell against that.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. In the past, you may have been with people or stayed with people who brought that up in you because that's how they treated you. And that can be really healing, like, oh, shit, that's why I stayed with that person.
Totally.
Right? And I didn't know what I know now, which is that you can get that without abuse, right? Like,
exactly.
That is so deeply healing.
And also, I mean, in some cases, I would say it was not even abuse. It was just like somebody being a shitty partner.
Yeah.
Maybe that is a nice note to close on, that it doesn't always have to be like the spiciest, most extreme thing that you are healing from. BDSM can heal us from the worst things in the world, but it can also heal some of the things that have just been unpleasant or shitty or not the best that we're like trying to grow from.
Totally. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, that is such a nice place to end. I love that.
Well, Andrea, How was you? Really, you've been listening to the show since the beginning, haven't you?
I have.
I remember we talked about it,
like
at a party or something, like in my first year that I was doing it.
Yep. Yeah, I actually found out about a lot of things through your podcast.
Well, that's awesome, and isn't it really beautiful that I feel like I've learned a lot from you here today, and just in general through knowing you. And how does it feel to have been a listener and now to be a guest?
Yeah,
indulge my fantasy of what I can bestow upon my listeners.
No, totally. It feels very full circle.
Cool.
And I remember there being a time when I was a younger person being like, I want to know about something enough to be on the show, you know, like a little. And then you find your thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it feels really good.
Awesome. And this is very cool stuff that you know a lot about.
Thank you.
I feel excited for the like hearts and minds that you are going to change in your whole career.
Thank you. That means a lot.
You're going to heal a lot of bullshit.
Oh, I can't wait.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So if people are curious about learning more about your work.
Yes.
How can they find out more?
You can find out more at my Instagram at Somatic Witch. You can follow me on a very comprehensive and long, beautiful list of queer and kinky and poly and trauma-affirming and aware therapists called Manhattan Alternative.
Cool.
And you can find out more about scheduling with me or someone from my collective at the Gender and Sexuality Therapy Collective.
Cool. Can you tell me what it means to be a somatic witch?
Yes. I feel like my somatic healing practice has a lot to do with my witch practice, that we contain what we need to heal inside of us, that the earth is a site of healing and feeling connected. a lot about energy, and that a lot of ways that have been repurposed as therapeutic practices have a very long history in feminine healing practices, which have always been categorized as witchcraft.
Cool. Good answer. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.